Hello, everybody. Welcome to
Secret Symphonies.
I'm Pete the Hat. My guest today is Mr. KG.
Saw a sign on a clothes shop door. It read, "Should happen sometimes." Made me smile for quite a while. What do they say? Little things please little minds. Guess that's me down to a T. I'm just a simple man finding my way. Oh, life seems inscrutable when you're analog in a digital world. So much I can't understand at all. Can't get a handle on it. I was brought up to treat all those I meet how I like to be treated myself. And that would say, at the end of the week, pay all your bills and slip half away, save for a rainy day. How I miss all the sweet loving bliss of our family home. Still dream about it. Oh, life seems inscrutable when you're analog in a digital world. So much I don't understand at all. Can't get a handle on it. When respect is earned with a gun or a knife, not when you love and care for the kids and your wife. The only thing that matters is the gathering of wealth. What the hell is going on? It's all going wrong.
The applause, we love the applause. We can't
thank you very much.
The applause button, the best one. All right, mate. How are you doing, mate?
I'm okay. I'm good.
You're good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you're good. I know you've listened to most of my podcasts.
I have.
A, because you just told me so, and B, mm-hmm. because you often text me or send me an email saying, oh, like this, like that, a bit of feedback. Always grateful for the feedback.
Yes.
Right. My first question, which you'll know because you listen to my podcast, is that the first instrument and the only instrument you've ever played?
No, started off in drums.
Okay.
It's about 12 or 13.
Right. How did that come about, though? I mean, was that in school? Was it?
I saw my first live band at a family party.
Who was that?
It was just a three-piece jazz band.
Oh, nice.
And I just sat there the whole night transfixed by the drummer.
Right.
And just nagged mum and dad for ages. And there was a little bit of a problem because my sister had been playing piano and been doing really well. They bought her a lovely piano and she stopped playing.
Oh.
So I wanted a drum kit and they thought the same would happen with me.
Right, so sell the piano, get a drum kit.
Yeah. I mean, I used to bang about on the piano and play some chords and all that. Anyway, they agreed to get one, a second-hand kit for me for a combined birthday and Christmas present.
Wow.
And that's what we've done. And I learned self-taught because in them days we couldn't afford lessons. There was no videos or anything like that.
Yeah.
So it was just watching Top of the Pops and mimicking what they were doing.
Right.
And then throughout school I got in a band, sort a new wave band.
What was your new wave band called? Come on.
We were called Mechanix, M-E-K-A-N-I-X.
Okay.
And it was just at the end of the punk as new wave started.
Okay, early 80s.
No, it was late 70s.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, 78, 79.
Okay.
Bit
of ABC.
We had, there was a local band called, oh, I forget what they're called, Down the Road, anyway. They had a big hit with Another Girl, Another Planet, the only ones they were called.
Right, take your word for it.
And they were kind of our songwriter's main inspiration.
Right.
And that's how I started playing guitar, because I used to feel left out when they would write.
Right, okay.
I used to go and make the tea, open a pack of cakes.
Oh.
All rock and roll.
You're just a drummer, mate.
Yeah,
all you do is got to keep time, mate.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's what I done. I just watched what they was doing in guitar, and then I just grabbed the guitar and then wanted to write.
Right.
And then co-wrote a couple of songs, one on my own, and that was it. And then once recording became available, so a little multi-tracker cassette thing in the 80s, it was then learning other instruments. So I used to play a little bit of keyboards, and of course as the recording has evolved and I've got a little home studio now, so I play whatever's needed. Bass, keyboards, I've got a banjo, a mandolin, a ukulele, harmonica.
Nice.
So I can play, I get a sort of tune out of my own things, most things, enough to be able to record my songs.
Right, got you. To do the things you want to do.
Yeah.
Just missing the brass.
But it's got brass on the keyboard, so I do brass arrangement and string arrangements on the keyboard.
Right, okay.
Reasonably complex ones. Well, certainly for someone that's had no musical training at all.
Right, right, right.
So, yeah, pretty much anything I can do, I sort of get around somehow, you know.
Yeah, 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 it sounds good. Mm. I mean, this is the thing about being an artist, right? Being a when you create something, like I have my studio at home, as you see, right? Mm. It's just like, I'm going to do this, I'll just figure it out.
Mm.
I'll use what I've got and I'll make it work.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's it. And I think that's how anybody who becomes, I mean, you might get to the point where I have lots of money and I can have my own little studio with the soundproofing and have, an 8-track mixer and so on and so forth. And that'll come and I'll be doing entire bands.
Yeah.
In the meantime, perfectly okay, really.
Yeah, yeah.
So that builds up. So was that the first band you were in? Mechanix.
That's been the only band I've been in.
Oh, right. Okay.
Because it evolved through school.
Got you.
So I think it started off, I think our first name was something, it was Capillary Action, because we had a kind of a bit of a hippie guy in the band. And so it was a little bit rock-based.
Right.
And then he left and another guy joined, Tony, who was the main songwriter, and he was a punk.
Right.
So I was more into probably, at the time, sort of soul music, 70s, because that's what my sister listened to, so that's mainly what I used to listen to. And the other guy was kind of into sort of 60s rock.
Right.
So when we mixed it all up, we then...
It was very messy.
Yeah, it was, yeah. But we had a good time.
But that's what you need. You need all these different influences to come together and create something a little bit unique, a little bit different, a little bit more, a little bit wild. So your first gig was a jazz band. What was your first, big gig, proper stadium?
Well, went to see.
Yeah. Any idea who that was?
Yeah, that would have been Glen Campbell at the Palladium.
Glen Campbell?
Yeah, with the Philharmonic Orchestra backing him as well.
Wow, I bet that was impressive.
It was amazing, yeah. He had a big screen there and with all films. I'd never seen anything like it because you didn't get stuff like that on the telly. So not like now where you've got YouTube, you can flick through loads of stuff. It was incredible.
Don't want to give away your age, but what year was that?
Well, I'm 60 in 2 days' time.
Oh, happy birthday for 2 days' time.
Cheers, I'm waiting for me cake, man. What is it?
Well, if I'd known, I've probably got some cupcakes somewhere. I've got a mince pie. Do you want a mince pie?
Well, from last Christmas.
So what was the first big game? Was Glen Campbell?
Glen Campbell,
What year was that?
Oh, I can't remember, mate. I have a job, remember what I've done this morning.
Yeah, like the rest of us. So if you could go to a big gig now, it's just occurred to me to ask you this,
mm-hmm.
Who would you go and see?
Technically, I don't like big gigs as such.
I understand.
But I did go to Hyde Park just to see Neil Young about 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay.
Just for the fact because it was Neil Young. Yeah. And I know I'd never see him any other way.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And he's definitely my main man, has been for many years. I learnt to play guitar with a Neil Young songbook.
Right.
So I don't tend to do big gigs. I don't think there's anyone I was fortunate. I'm a big fan of Kate Bush, and I see her when she toured a few years ago. But that was at the Shepherd's Bush Empire, so you got a couple of thousand people. So that's
a nice little gig.
Yeah, that's lovely. That is. But these big ones, I'm not really.
Kentish Town. What was the name of it? It's Tiered. Oh no, I can't remember. Back in the early 90s, late 80s, even, who did we go and see? At the tip of my tongue, I can see her face, Melissa Etheridge.
Oh, okay.
And it was her second album, Brave and Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And a really good gig. But it's tiered, so you can get about 200 people in front of the stage.
Mm.
And then there's actually seating with like sort of, like, I don't know, it's tiered. And then there's a table along each tier. Mm. And the bar's right at the top at the back, but it goes straight up.
Okay.
And it's, and I can't remember what the name of the venue is, and people are going to tell me that soon, aren't you? Yes, you're gonna email me, call me, I don't know, do something.
I've probably been there, but
And I'll remember it eventually. It's people shouting if they're listening, you know it. And so that was a brilliant venue because of the lack of space in some ways.
Yeah.
Whereas when you go things like Pink Floyd, Aerosmith, we're talking, you know, stadium gigs.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, 60,000-70,000 people.
Mm.
Bit different. I was thinking about this the other day. So if I want to go and see a band now, I'd think, because the Chili Peppers' new album's really shit hot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really enjoying that. I'd got to go and see the Chili Peppers because I missed them in the 80s, 90s.
Okay.
It didn't happen. I nearly got to see them. They were with the Black Crowes, I think, were supporting them, as I recall, back in the day. And First Aid Kit, ever heard of them?
Yeah.
They're really good. I'd love to see them live. Yeah. They're quite good live. Mm-hmm. And who else? I mean, there's a list.
Mm.
I have a list of bands now. I didn't have a list of bands for a very long time.
Right, okay.
But I'm listening to a lot more music now
than
I have done for a long time and enjoying it.
That's good.
Yeah, it is good. It is good. Are you listening? Do you listen to other musicians in the same way that I'm always listening to new music? Are you always hunting down new
music?
Constantly. Yeah. What are you listening to at the moment? Is there anything that stands out?
I still buy CDs.
Well, I can't help you with that.
I have cats, so vinyl's no good with cats. Things that rotate and cats jumping on it don't work. So it has to be CDs. But right. I purposely bought a CD player back in the day, donkeys years ago, that's got a really flat sound.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds as much like vinyl as it can do.
Mm-hmm.
And a really nice hi-fi. I got a vintage amp. I got you know, old amp and from the 90s. And
see, these are Ruick talismans.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got a pair of Templars in the office.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I've got some quad speakers, which are little quads, which are really nice. So I buy CDs, and if the artist don't have a hard copy available, like, because I buy lots of unsigned or people that are signed to independent labels.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I still burn it onto a CD and make up covers for that reason. For the simple reason is I've got a shelf in my lounge with about 500 CDs.
Right.
And when I decide what I want to play, the anticipation of pulling a CD down from the shelf and taking it out the box enhances the listening experience rather than just go, I want that, and hitting something on a computer that plays the list of what you want.
Right.
So I still do that. So I still buy, I have to buy jewel cases and CDs and make the album up. So I did it. I've brought a list with me because I thought, because I know I forget. But obviously I bought Flo's because we both was, like what Flo does.
That was fantastic.
Yeah. And Flo's got an EP as well. I don't know if, did you get the
I've
EP?
I've heard the EP as well. Yeah, yeah.
That's brilliant as well.
Yep, yep.
There's a, most of my artists I get from SoundCloud because that's where I one of the places I put my music, and there's a big SoundCloud community on there.
Yep.
So there's an Australian singer-songwriter, I think she lives in Nashville at the moment, her name's Juliet Sunflower.
Oh.
She's really good. I don't think she's signed. She's brilliant. And as I say, I did bring a list, but I can't.
It's in my bag over there. That I listened to that I really liked was a gig at Chambers.
Yeah.
And it was Anna Ash.
Okay.
And she's, lives in Los Angeles by way of Ohio.
Okay.
And she was fantastic, mate.
Yeah.
Quite, very funny, actually. Yeah. She was really quite humorous. But I'd struggle to describe her music without not doing it a disservice, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not going to do that. But that was a really good gig, and off the back of that. And I think that that's the thing. When you see him live and then you buy the album, that's probably the best way to do it.
Rather
than sometimes I listen to things, oh, that's really, what's that, follow that. But I always want to know, where's the live performance?
Yeah.
Because I've seen performers, I'm not naming any names, where I've listened to the album and seen a live performance and thought, well, okay.
Yeah.
Well, either you're having a bad day.
Yeah.
Or the auto-tune's not working this week, right? And it's kind of like, that does a disservice, if you like, to other artists that actually can perform live.
Yeah.
And music should be live. That's my, you know... I want to get. That's why focused on music town is such a big thing for me. I think for a lot of other people, because it's like live music, and that's what you need. That's where you get the real impact, if you like.
Of course, the other side of the coin is, as songwriters, we actually would prefer you to hear the album first,
right?
Because if you're listening to a songwriter perform for the first time, any of his material or her material, you're kind of hearing the sketch of the song. It's like if you're an artist and you have an exhibition, you don't put up your drawings, you put up the oils or the watercolours. And as a songwriter, if I'm performing just with a guitar and someone's listening to me, I really want them to hear the song how I recorded it on the album.
Right.
Because it's got piano, drums, bass, it's got all the different colours and layers.
Yeah.
So that is...
Well, I can really appreciate and relate to that, because when you... performed at the open mic and we chose the song, and then you made the joke about, oh, if we just had someone who was a classically trained pianist,
with Elise,
and then Elise came along and you recorded it, and then you released it and we listened to it. That was a wonderful bit of production, mate.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
you know, that was like, wow. Yeah, that's
but that's how I would like people to hear my songs first of all, and then if they come and hear them live, then that's great. And that's when I had a chat with Elise when she come over to record the track with me. She put some beautiful piano and vocals down.
She did.
And we were talking about how we both get nervous.
Right.
And I said to her, the reason I get nervous is not because of the people watching me, it's because this is maybe my one chance with just voice and guitar to put a song forward that I might have spent 3 months in the studio recording, doing so much to it. And I need to do vocals and guitar the best I can to stand a chance of getting that across. And I'm quite happy with my voice, but I wish I was a better guitarist.
Okay.
So I said to her, if I was the equivalent guitar player as you are, pianist, i.e. classically trained, read and write music, I would be more confident in delivering that song the best I can. And she said, well, you wouldn't, because I feel exactly the same on the piano. She said, it's because you set your standards. You want to do the best you can. And no matter how good a musician you are, if you don't quite reach that limit where you want to get to, you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm trying to relate. But see, the only thing I have to fall back on is when I write my poetry, right, and perform that. And that's like, I don't really suffer from worrying about what people are going to think. Mm-hmm. You get what you get. And I don't know what I'm going to do until I do it.
Yeah.
Which is, so I relate to that. And it's like you just, you have an idea in your head of how you want it to sound when I'm reading it. This is, so if you read my poetry, it's not the same as me performing it.
No, gotcha.
It's a very different experience. Yeah. You'll have your pause where you pause and add the emphasis where you add it. Whereas in my head, I know how that particular performance goes. I know where the pauses are and they're there for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're performing, I get that. It's like you need to now, when you'll never get it 100% right ever.
No.
You'll never be happy.
I never have done. No.
You'll never be happy with it. And it's like, but people who are watching, if they're with you, they're on your, I think it was Alex was saying, no, they're on your side, right? They don't. Even if you go wrong, everybody smiles and you grin because you know you've dropped something, right? But they're all still with you, like, well, because you got the balls to get up and do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's much more open mic related, I think, if you went to a professional gig. But I remember going to see Dr. Feelgood at the Lees Cliff Hall.
Oh, yeah.
In about, God, I'd have been 19, 20 maybe, so late 80s, and proper full-on... And they were older than me. I mean, I was 28, so it was 25 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these guys are already in their 50s, properly hacking away at it. And the lead guitarist, his bottom E string that just snapped while he was, and you could see it go. Mm-hmm. He had a cigarette hanging off his fret at the top, and it went. He just carried on playing, didn't even pause. Just he knew it had gone, obviously. Carried on finishing, and then when he stopped, put the guitar down, picked up another one, and carried on. And you just go, now that's... That's yeah. that's something else, you know. That's yeah. a real, because at first we didn't know it, and then you just see it. How is because we're right near the front, you know. But yeah, so I think I think you get to a level perhaps where it just becomes irrelevant. You get what you get. You get the performance, and it changes every time because of who you are. When I read my poetry back, things I've written a long time ago, I have a different influence now when I perform it because I've changed. That's how that works. Yeah. You know? So,
and funny enough, that conversation with Lee's really helped, because since then I still get nervous, but I don't get, my legs don't shake when I walk up to the mic now.
Okay.
So that stopped.
Right.
So because I think, well, I could be the world's greatest guitarist and it would make Jack difference.
Exactly so. And actually what you do is really good. It's really good.
Yeah, and I start to enjoy it a little bit now, which is a good thing.
Good. Yeah, no, I'm all for you, mate. Everything since we first heard you again, me and Tony, like, that's fucking great. More.
Well, this is, I mean, I wouldn't have done this a year ago.
So we're moving forwards at a rapid pace.
We're getting there, man. We're getting there.
Worst gig. Do you gig? I don't know if you go out and gig or if you just record in your home studio.
Open mics are the only things I do. But worst gig, I'd have to go back to the band.
Right.
When I was 15, I think it was. We found a manager that liked us and thought he could do something with us.
Really?
Yep. And but he said, you're kind of playing nice places. You know, we had a regular gig in a local pub in Forest Hill, where I'm from, in South East London.
Forest Hill, I lived there for a year.
Yeah.
Hate Forest Hill.
Oh, right.
I didn't have a good time. We had a bunch of Scottish guys lived in the floor above us who had outrageous parties all night and jumped up and down. It wasn't good. The Hornimin Museum, on the other hand, is fantastic, and everyone should visit that.
They've
got the hurdy-gurdy. You won't see one of those very often.
Yeah, actually, I went back a few years ago and had another look, because I was always up there as a kid, because the park next door, so you could go. And
what's the park called?
It's Horniman's Park, I think.
Is it?
I think so.
It's only small.
Yeah, but it's really beautiful the way they keep it. Yeah. So the worst gig would go back to then. So we got this manager and he goes, yep, you're doing all these really nice places where everyone likes you. You need to get experience, play a couple of dumps. So he booked us in a festival in Deptford. And I don't know what Deptford's like now, but at the time it was a real shit on, man.
Yeah, mate.
And he booked us two gigs in a day. So we're umping all the gear about, setting it up.
So was it Deptford to New Cross? Like the walk down the road?
Yeah. So we done one in a hallway. So we set up, played like a Battle of the Bands thing, and we was pretty bad there. It was raving hot as well, really hot. And we went back to his place, had a sandwich, cuppa, watched a bit of telly, then one and done another one. I think the pub was called the King's Head, I think, and it was a punk pub as well, just as punk was ending, and we weren't punk.
No, right.
So we got up, we done, I think, into the second track, they put the jukebox on, so we kind of got the... But it was Revelation by the Beatles. Revolution by the Beatles, so that was, I thought, well, you can't whack that, you know, they're better than us. So then we started packing up the gear, and then a female punk band come and said, can we use your stuff to play? And we had a little conflict, and we thought, well, the gear might get smashed up if they play, but if we don't, it certainly will.
Yeah.
So we let them do that, and we just got out there with a few broken bits and pieces. But the whole day from beginning to end was a complete disaster.
Wow.
We was out of tune, everyone was getting booed, and it was just... And it taught us something, really, that not every... Because before that, we would do a couple of gigs a month, and they were going down really well.
Pick your venue, that's what he taught you.
Yeah. And your audience, I guess.
Pick the right audience.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds horrific, actually. It does sound pretty...
Well, one of the punks was there. He was sharpening his eye pencil with a flick knife. And when you're looking at that, you're thinking, maybe not the right place for me to be in at the moment.
Yeah, I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
I want to go home.
Yeah.
So you're from London originally, from Forest Hill?
Forest Hill, yeah.
When did you move out of Forest Hill?
I bought my first flat in Sydenham, just up the road, when I was 21.
I've lived in Sydenham as well.
Yeah, you've been about, man, haven't you?
I lived in Laurie Park Gardens.
Yeah, I wasn't far from that, yeah.
Crystal Palace Park over the back, mate, lovely.
Yeah, Crystal Palace Park is gorgeous. I like my parks and my walks and all that.
Yeah, if you're going to live in London, you've got to be near a park. It is a must, otherwise you'll go mad. You'll go mad anyway living in London, but at least that helps to alleviate
it. It does.
Especially during the summers.
Yeah. I mean, all that area, I mean, it's nicer now than when I lived there, because obviously the city's moved out and more wealth's come in there, so.
Yeah, I mean, I was there I moved up, Forest Hill was 95.
Okay.
And prior to that, I'd been somewhere else, which I can't remember, thankfully. And then I was in Beckenham for a year.
Yeah.
Which is really weird because Beckenham's right next to Penge. But Beckenham's like Kent and Penge is like South East London.
Yeah.
You know, and then Sydenham, and I left when I left Sydenham, I came back down here.
Mm.
And then went to Cambodia. So that's another story.
Yeah, yeah, I remember you saying that. Yeah.
So, yeah, Sydenham was. I like Sydenham.
Yeah.
I like Sydenham. It's one, basically one high street.
One high street, yeah, yeah.
You can't really go wrong.
But that bit where we lived, I was in. You was in Laurie Park Gardens?
I was, yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. So I was in Laurie Park itself. So.
All right, okay.
So not far from you. Right opposite the park, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That bit is lovely around there, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and you've got the little petting zoo thing or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's just, it's a really nice
all
place.
All the fake dinosaurs in
there. Yeah, that's it, in the park.
Little aviary and all that. Yeah, no, yeah. It was lush, mate, yeah.
And then from there we moved to a place called Green Street Green, which is just for Alpington.
Where?
Green Street Green.
Green Street Green, try saying that three times quickly.
Because it had a green and then a green and the street was in, the high street was in between it.
Right.
See?
They thought about that one really
They did, yeah, yeah, down the pub, I reckon. And we was there for 25 years and then cruise down here about, or it'd be 10 years in a couple of days' time.
Right, okay. So you've been, you're in Dimchurch now, aren't you? Over that way?
Yeah, yeah.
What's it like living in Dimchurch?
It's, well, we're just outside. We're a mile and a bit outside.
Okay, far enough away.
Yeah, yeah. It's,
I'm not dissing Dimchurch. Anybody who's from Dimchurch who's listening, I love Dimchurch. As a kid, we used to go there. My dad used to buy whelks and give us pick, what was it, the little cockles.
Yeah.
And you'd go and swim in the sea and all that caper. And it was great, you know, when I was a kid.
It obviously gets busy in the summer, but because we're outside and it's like a sort of private estate, places were built between the 30s and 50s, we don't get none of the busyness if we don't go out because it's just like... It's
far only, enough away, not for no
exactly.
No one's going down that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And then at the back of my garden, I've got all the Romney Marshes, so I look up to Lym Castle.
Nice.
The little train runs the other side of the field behind me, so...
Ooh. It's idyllic.
So he gives me a little toot. Well, I believe he gives me a toot. Anyway.
You need to record that. Have that on the track, mate.
Yeah, yeah. We must. Yeah, yeah. It'd be good, wouldn't it?
It would be good. It would be good. Where are you from? Toot, don't you know? You don't recognise it. excuse me while I burp. Okay, so this is the two-pronged question, which is what's the best advice you've ever been given and what's the best advice as a musician you've ever been given?
The best advice, I would say, going back to my them song lyrics there, actually, was from my dad. He's treat everyone how you like to be treated yourself.
Right.
I think that's a really good... But he told me and my sister that from day one.
It's biblical, isn't it, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Do unto others as you'd have them do unto
exactly,
you.
Exactly, yeah. It's just, the Cockney way of saying it, I guess. and it's something I've always lived by. So, and that's put me in good stead throughout my life. So I think that is really important. And another bit from him, again, in that lyric, because his song's kind of about my dad, is at the end of the week, pay all your bills, stick half away. So you pay all your debts, you put half away, then you spend the other half. So it means you never get into debt that way.
Yeah.
Which, again, I never have been because of that advice. So.
That's really good advice. I wish I'd known that when I was young.
He was a smart cookie, you know, for a Coleman.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's not where you come from, it's where you're going.
Well, exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So, actually, I've lost track of what you, because you were saying about...
Music was the other one. Music advice.
Yes.
It's kind of what I tell myself, which is do what you want. And because it's quite easy. So if I've written a song and I've written the lyrics and I'm looking at the lyric, I'm going, that's a little bit either out there or a little bit, that could be taken in the wrong way. So especially nowadays where how sensitive people are.
This is a joke, right? So, you know, I'm transparent. Yeah. My pronouns are who, where.
Yeah.
You've got to be careful.
You have, yeah. But I kind of go, well, it's me. I'm not writing this song to sell shitloads of records. I'm writing it for me. And the same goes with the production. I might think... commercially, this song that I've written would be better with like a pop sound and like an upbeat toppy like they have on radios, really top end sound. Right. And then I go, but that's not me. I like acoustic instruments. And
but that's the thing about if you're going to perform and it's going to be authentic, you have to present yourself. And that's really a vulnerable thing to do, because you're really saying, look, this is who I really am. This is what I'm. So again, when I write, it's like, that's it. This is what you get. I'm not hiding anything.
But that is what my lyrics are, mate. They're
it was an American writer called, and I might again got this wrong, H.L. Mencken, and he said, writing's easy. He said, just open up a vein and start. And it's kind of like that sometimes.
It is, yeah.
You know.
Well, one of my mates said, reading my song lyrics is like having a peek into my If I Had a Diary. That's what he says.
Right, yeah, no, that sounds good. But that's right. That's the best songs, the most memorable songs.
Mm.
There's something that they reveal something, a person reveals something about themselves which you can relate to, because that's authentic. Mm. You know, it's a real deal, so to speak. Hey, fancy giving us another song?
Yeah, why not?
What was the first one called, by the way?
That was called Shut Happens.
Hey. So what's this next one called?
This is Where I Once Stood.
Oh, nice.
Which is the one I recorded with Elise.
Yeah.
Have we got some? We have. Okay.
On the ball.
Cool. I'll tell you what I'll do. Me aching bones. There we go. Should we do it then, mate?
Yeah, crack on.
So many of us fall, 'cause we all heard the call to bleed blue and yellow. For this is our own home, dust will cover our bones forever. We'll never come see. For if I can't be found, lightning marks the ground. And if I can't be found, lightning marks ground where I once stood. Keep our children safe, teach them of our bravery. Death and defiance will never be compliant to invasion, 'cause this is our nation. For if I can't be found, lightning marks the ground. And if I can't be found, lightning marks the ground. Lightning marks the ground. Lightning marks the ground. Where I was.
Thank you very much.
I
love it.
Take that with me in the open mics, I think.
I keep saying I'm going to get some new applause type sounds, but I never do. I just stay with that one because I like that one.
Yeah, it's cool.
When I was looking, I wanted something that's not a stadium and it isn't the one hand clapping, and just something in between that's kind of nice. And,
mm-hmm.
So, you know, because it's good. And most people, when they hear it the first time, they laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's a giggle. But anyway, so I was having other conversations with myself while you were playing about, what can I ask you, what should I talk about? And I was thinking about things like, is there any instrument that you'd like to play that you don't play?
A stringed instrument, a cello maybe.
A cello?
Yeah, or maybe a fiddle. But I know they're quite difficult to learn. And because all I want to do is write and record, the little bit of time I have in my life to do music,
yeah,
I want to write and record. I don't really, I have, if I spent time learning another instrument, I wouldn't be able to write and put the time into writing and recording.
Got it.
So hence, I have a mandolin, a banjo and a ukulele on my wall that I pick up probably once a year as and when I need to record a song with a mandolin. And then I put it back. So I never really learn how to play it. I just learn how to do...
what you want to do for that session. Yeah.
But with a stringed instrument, you wouldn't be able to do that. Because if you learn a little bit of it, it would sound awful.
Mm.
You've got to be proficient with it. To
create something.
Yeah. But certainly, maybe when I retire, when I have more time or something, that may be... because I love real strings, and particularly cellos.
Cellos are a lovely sound.
Yeah. They look gorgeous.
And a viola, for that matter. That's quite a lovely sound.
Yeah, I just love stringed instruments, so...
Are you planning on at any point, I know you do all studio production now, are you planning at any point doing any live gigs?
Well, I wouldn't mind, I mean, I'm building up enough courage to do it now.
Is this as a one-man show with a guitar at like now?
I would love a band, but to get a band tight to be able to gig, it takes rehearsals, and it's
a lot of effort.
So it'd probably be just me and me Jack. Would have thought.
Right, with the occasional accompaniment from a keyboard player, if you're lucky.
Maybe, yeah, that would be nice if I could persuade her, because she's a busy bee, that woman.
Yeah, of course she is,
But yeah, that would be good.
So I'll put it out there to anybody if you want to get in touch, if you want to support Mr. KG on his journey. you never know.
Well.
That would be interesting. I think if you could do a set, I don't know. I'm not sure how many songs are in a set. Does anybody know? Is there a number?
No.
Does that depend how long you're playing for?
Yeah, yeah.
There's plenty of people I do know, I mean, who record and then they gig on their own with a guitar.
Yeah.
So it's perfectly possible and you're perfectly capable when you're set.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I'd encourage you to do it.
Cheers, man.
It's all right. If you could put anything on it, and again, when I asked Elise this, she was like, oh, of course you asked that. Well, if you could put anything on a billboard, a message on a billboard, like that was going to be seen by, well, Folkestone Maps, what would you put on a billboard? What would your message be? What's your raison d'être?
Right, okay. I don't know, maybe to love and be loved.
Love and be loved.
Yeah.
Well, I agree with the loving part. Well, you know, don't take it literally, but, you know.
Have a pulled.
Be loving. Yeah, no, I agree. I totally agree. I tend to go with two very simple things: do no harm, and help others.
Yeah,
and it's I haven't. This is today's badge. I don't know if you can read today's badge, but I wear a badge every day.
Okay,
and I started doing it during the summer when I was going to lots of musics and getting far too drunk occasionally, and just decided to do it and have kept it up. And so I was talking yesterday, day before, with a friend, and I was saying, we were talking, and I said, yeah, you just, if, and it comes from somewhere, and I've read it somewhere, but I don't remember where, but if everybody helped everybody, then nobody would need any help.
Mm.
And I kind of just go, so I just help people now. It's like, I just kind of go, if I see someone in need, and especially if they ask, you kind of have to get off it and go, even if it's inconvenient, and you've got this judgment or an opinion about whether you should or shouldn't, because you're busy doing this or you're involved in that, just go, let all that go. Just help. And actually, things are a lot easier because you're not resisting.
Mm.
That's so it helps, honest.
Well, it makes sense.
Yeah, well, does it? Because some people don't.
Yeah, to us it does.
Okay, yeah, I'll take that.
And people like us.
And people like us, mate.
Yeah.
Right, I'll tell you what I'm going to do.
Okay.
Because you know I do a quiz.
You do. This is a bit I was kind of dreading, Pete.
Well, I found this quiz, right, and it's got...
Is it for 5-year-old or something? I'll be all right.
Well, no, it covers a lot of things, right? Nursery rhymes, notes and rest, songs for children, percussion instruments, bands, music language, about singing.
Okay.
Music notation, about the piano, not for you. Instruments, scales and key signatures.
Oh, crikey.
Yeah, no, that would have been an Elise job.
I've done no musical theory at all. So.
Okay, the Beatles. with the lot.
That's okay. The Beatles is okay.
You reckon the Beatles is okay?
I'm not like a... I mean, I've got all their albums and I listen to them, but I'm not a super fan or anything.
Right, what we'll do, we'll take off the answers, because I don't know without cheating.
And put them closer to me where I can see them.
I'll leave them on the floor in front of you.
Yeah, yeah. Because these glasses are good, but aren't that good.
No, no, but that's tiny writing as well.
It is, yeah. That's cunning of you to do it that small.
Okay, so there are only 12 questions. Right.
So okay, so it's 12 to get wrong then, isn't it?
No, be so. I'm going to have to make sure I've got my... Because when we do this, of course, we need to have... here we go. This is the right answer.
Yeah.
Here we go. That's the wrong answer.
Okay, yeah.
So you know where you're at. And the first one is so easy. If you get it wrong, you should just probably leave.
That's how
easy it is. Right? Mm-hmm. So the first one is... The Beatles consisted of, it's multiple choice as well, so I made it really easy for you.
Okay. Right, okay.
A, three musicians, mm-hmm. B, four musicians, C, five musicians, and D, six musicians.
Well, it's actually four.
Yeah, it is four.
But, of course, George Martin was the fifth Beatle.
Well, so. There is that. And who is that, the drummer?
Who?
They had a drummer.
No, that was Pete Best, the first drummer.
Did he die?
No, they just dumped him and got Ringo in. Yeah. And George Martin's the producer, the guy that actually recorded them.
And he died in 62.
No, he died.
Oh, Epstein.
Yeah, the manager died in the 60s.
Yeah, yeah.
Or late 60s or something, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was earlier, but... Okay, so anyway, you get a point for that.
Okay.
There we go.
That's my one.
Right. The song Yesterday was written by A, Paul, B, John, C, Ringo, D, George.
That's Paul.
Was it Paul? I'm going to look at my answer. Yes. It was Paul. Okay.
And getting back to the playing, just to butt in your questions there, mate, playing a song and a record, like, he could play that live because it's only got him guitar and strings on it. There's no other production. So he could just get his guitar and play it and it'd still sound amazing.
Right, okay. I'm sure I've probably seen that performance once or twice.
Mm.
He does it everywhere.
And the fact he's a fabulous guitarist as well, that helps.
And a pianist for that matter.
He does everything great.
Yeah, yeah. The Beatles came from, I mean, this is easy, right?
I like these, yeah, these are...
Okay, so I'm just going to ask you, where the Beatles come from?
They come from Liverpool.
Of course they came from Liverpool. Right, the Beatles formed their group, named The Beatles, in which year? 1950, 56, 1960 or 62?
That would be 60.
It was 60. I'm impressed. So you're 4 for 4. The Beatles disbanded in what year?
That would be 70 or 71. 70.
It was 1970.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. Impressive. Right. Okay. The Beatles did not write A, Michelle, B, Eleanor Rigby, C, Satin Doll, or D, Nowhere Man?
The third one, Satin Doll.
Third one, six. Yeah, it is. It's correct. I'm like, wow, okay. A cartoon featuring the music of the Beatles was called...
Yellow Submarine.
Yellow Submarine. If you don't know that, you shouldn't really be talking about the Beatles. Mm-hmm. You should leave the room. Right. Mm-hmm. Most of the Beatles songs were written by...
Lennon and McCartney.
That's correct. The Beatles had a manager called?
Brian Epstein.
The Beatles made a documentary film called?
Oh.
Mm.
Documentary film. Documentary. Is that the... Oh, no. Don't know that. I probably do, but it's slipped the old brain.
Would you like me to give you the choices?
Yeah, go on then.
Okay. A Hard Day's Night, eh? B, Let It Be, C, Nowhere Man, or D, Love Me Do.
Well, Let It Be is the one on the roof, isn't it? Is it?
I don't know. I'll take your word for it.
That was the documentary when they performed on the roof.
Well, there you are then.
I think that's the one.
Yeah, it is the one, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, that's it.
You worked it out. It's all good.
Do have my moments, man.
Oh, see, number 11's The Beatles starred in a movie and it gives you all these choices which are like, obviously... Oliver. Yes, I don't think so. And the answer's Help. And I'm telling you because it's, you know, you'll know. Everyone will know. If you don't know, I mean, you're either, you know, not old enough to know. Actually, I know. My daughter's 17. She wouldn't know. Because why would she know? She probably doesn't know who the Beatles are. Sad.
Because they're the greatest band ever.
The greatest band ever?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, let's not go there. The Beatles performed in a Liverpool jazz club called...
Cavern.
The Cavern. Right. So basically, if you got any of those wrong, you are not a Beatles fan and you know nothing about them.
Yeah.
Congratulations. You deserve to be on the naughty step.
Thank you for being so kind to me with the Beatles questions, man.
Oh, you know, I want people to be successful.
Well,
you know,
I was thinking general knowledge. Oh, should I look up things before I come?
Should I read an encyclopedia? Yeah, yeah. Just in case.
For the first time.
When I was a kid, right, we had a set of encyclopedias on the shelf, and there were two reference books, because one would be history, one would be science and whatever. And you'd have to look up, there was two references. One was called A to K and the other one was L to Z. So you had to look up the word in the first one and it would then tell you which of the other ones to go and look it up in.
Mm.
And I used to say to my mum, "Mum, what's such and such?" You go, A to K. Well, L to Z. And so you never got any further than just, so you end up just going and look for yourself.
Of course, it's Google now, I suppose, isn't it?
Well, yeah, even Google's hugely inaccurate. Searching is an art form in itself. And depends on, there's all kinds of search. One of my favourite search engines was always, it's called a meta search engine because it looks at lots of different search engines, and that's called dogpile.com.
Okay.
And then it searches through, you know, Bing and Yahoo and Google, and you get better results, essentially, because it covers a lot more bases. If you could change anything in the music industry, what would it be?
I don't know. I guess the sound of pop records.
The sound of pop records?
Yeah.
Why? Because how do they sound to you?
They sound just so trebly and toppy, and I hate that sound with a passion.
Is there not any band or artist you can think of where that's not the case?
Not that where you'd have to shed loads of records.
Okay.
Because it's kind of the sound. It has to be...
Is that a modern thing, or is that a...
It's definitely... It's come through digital.
You know, okay.
So through this, everything sounding so clean and so clear, and it's reached home studios now. So lots of people that I listen to on SoundCloud, which is basically people like me that write and record at home in a spare room with their pants hanging on a washing line and a ladder in the corner and a paint tin down there.
Yeah.
Because they get all these things called plugins, which are basically, they sound like stuff and they plug them in. And they're all enhanced to make, you know, when you're watching the telly and you're watching a film and you're really into it, and then an advert comes on and the volume goes up two or three levels.
Well, I don't do that, but I do know that happens.
Okay. Well, the volume doesn't go up. All they do is they put an enhancer on it, which does your ears and your brain to make it sound more brighter.
Okay.
And these plug-in things that they use these days are just full of crap like that. And I hate that with a passion. So, and every pop record you hear is just full of stuff like that.
Are there no exceptions?
Well, I mean, not a big chart man, Pete, but whenever the radio flicks on, then, I mean, I love the sound of 70s records because there was no computers. There was, everything was played.
Well, this becomes that age-old conversation for our generation, certainly, and older, which is the difference between vinyl and CD. As soon as you get away from vinyl, the vinyl you buy now is from a digital pressing, so that doesn't count.
No.
Because it's not the same. It's not an analog recording, and therefore it doesn't have that depth. It doesn't have that space that exists. And I'm talking to the converted now, because if you don't understand what I mean, there's no hope for you if you've never heard vinyl properly. You know,
vinyl cranked up is the best sound. Old vinyl cranked up is the best sound.
Absolutely, yeah.
You do have to crank it up because the volume is lower, so you have to really work your amp. But then makes it sound better as well. So.
Yeah. You get no argument from me.
And even at home, the way people record now, basically at home, is all done with a computer. So they use a mouse to control everything, right? So, and it's all digital.
Yep.
So I record digital because it's the only way that you can get rid of all the hiss and all that stuff.
Yep.
But I use something called a Porter Studio, which is I don't use a mouse. It's got buttons and faders and knobs and switches. I love that tactile recording.
But you actually are also playing instruments and recording yourself playing the instruments.
But the thing is, it's also the recording process is actually more hands-on than flicking a mouse and then going, recording the guitar and then going, I don't really like that sound, but what I can do is I can call up a plugin that will alter that sound, whereas I go, I don't like the sound, I've got to play the whole thing again.
Right.
And even though my recordings are still digital, most people, when they hear them, think they're actually analog. They think I use a tape.
Right.
And the reason is because I don't use any plugins and because I take top end off of everything and boost the lower mids frequencies,
yep.
which gives it that warmth that you would get from vinyl.
Yeah. That's what's missing all the time. It's just that the top and low end are gone.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it's just this sort of very narrow band of sound.
Yeah,
it's horrible. It's horrible. Yeah, no, I don't like it either. It's difficult to explain to people if you've never heard it, if you've never had the privilege of having like vinyl played.
Yeah,
you know, a proper vinyl pressing at top whack.
Yeah, but it does have to be cranked up. That's the main thing, because lower down it sounds a bit dead.
I recall when I would have been, I guess, at 15, 16, and I had a set of speakers, and I would play Iron Maiden. I was a big fan of Iron Maiden when I was young. And what you do is you lay on the floor with a small cushion or a pillow,
mm-hmm.
and you put the speakers either side of your head, and then you turn it up, and that's how you listen to it.
Crikey.
And, well, because, you know, when you're young, you're daft. But you feel the vibration.
Is that altered, mate?
Didn't do me any damage at all. What happens is that the floor vibrates slightly as well, and you get that bass through.
Mm, nice, yeah.
And you don't have to have it particularly loud, of course, because you're right next to your head. But,
yeah.
So I remember doing that. I don't know if I did it too often, but... When you play something like that, you get, because it's real bass. I mean, it's not you know, Steve Harris giving it some. So, and it was well produced.
Mm.
Whereas I can think of other bands. I was talking to a mate of mine who's a real audiophile, and he was saying the first recording of Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction was terrible.
All right.
He says that's really, really poorly produced. But it was a great album.
Okay.
And I like the way it's really raw and not quite professional, because after that they went really seamless.
Right.
And so I like the idea of that. There's a local band here that don't perform in The Mistreated.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew the drummer, Mole, and his other half, Lois. And when they played, the drum was in the middle. And their first album, which I've got a copy of on vinyl, they recorded it with just one mic in the middle of the room's mono, because they were kind of 60s sound.
Mm-hmm.
And it just works perfectly for them.
Okay.
It just really works for the sound. And I think that's what's missing from music for me in modern culture, is that I'm hoping we're starting to see that, you know, with Elise, where she's doing this concept album. We're starting to see more people really exploring rather than this narrow, poppy, same rappy stuff. You know, it's like, no.
But the only thing
is that just because I've got old?
Partly, it is partly that, but also if you want to have any kind of, if you want to stand a chance of having success, that's the sound you have to go to. Like, there's a guy on SoundCloud that he's based in America somewhere. He calls himself Little Shout, and his name's Chris, and he made a demo album like I make at home a few years ago, and I bought it.
Right.
And I chat to him occasionally on the old interweb. And he actually got some interest from a record company there, and they popped him into a studio, in a pro studio, and said, come on, let's make this album. And he said they were interrupting everything that he wanted to do with just making it bright and breezy. And his stuff is like mine. It's kind of like Melons and Collies, you know.
It's kind of that.
And we want to speed it up. We want to do-do-do. And because they knew that that's the only way he would stand a chance at selling more records and maybe having more of his success.
So it's just a commercial thing.
Yeah, it is, yeah. And so he blew him away, man, and I think he's just doing his own stuff again.
I'm very grateful for you, Chris, whoever you are.
Yeah, he's a top lad as well,
I'm happy you kept your salts, because that's what... Well, if everybody did that, we'd put them out of business, surely.
Yeah, it would help, wouldn't it?
You know, maybe that's... And I'm not saying to anybody who's done it and is successful at it that that's not the case, because a lot of people get... Certainly in the early days, we're getting taken advantage of, Elvis being the classic case Right, so where can people find you and your music? Now, SoundCloud is the obvious, because you mentioned that several times.
Yeah, I mean, it's I've got an album, an EP, and the album's called DIY. which stands for Demo It Yourself. And it's got, I think, 12 tracks on it.
Right.
And then I've got a 4-track EP, and then the single, Where I Once Stood, with Elise doing piano and vocals. They're all on all the main, As Your Father's, Spotify and all that lot.
Right.
And then I'm just hope to have the new album finished, kind of start beginning of the next year.
Right.
And then I'll pop that up there as well. I think I'm 8 songs recorded into that.
Okay, cool.
So yeah.
Have you got anything on like YouTube? You got any video?
There, no videos. I've just set up my YouTube channel.
Okay.
You can listen to my songs on YouTube because DistroKid, who's my distributor, they pop your songs everywhere. So it goes on iTunes and Spotify and that and YouTube.
Yeah.
There's no videos as such, but I've just started setting up a YouTube channel for that. And what I'll probably do is probably nick a few of the ones that you've taken me off
yeah,
Chambers and whack them on there.
Yeah, yeah, have it.
And then make some myself eventually. That's the plan with that. But yeah, all the major streaming things have got my album and EP on. And what's really interesting is I always used to wonder why artists like myself, independent or even signed to small companies, why they might put 3 EPs out and not an album. And I could never quite get that. So lots of the people that I've bought off of Bandcamp, my album's on Bandcamp as well,
yeah.
They have like 2 or 3 EPs which can make an album. And so I put my album out on Spotify and, you know, a few people listen to it and so forth. But then I had 4 songs left over that I thought I'll put a little EP out. And the EP got far more listens to than the album because people just don't want to listen to 12 songs. They want to listen to a few. So that's why all these people, they put out several EPs and not an album.
Got ya. So the attention span of the general public has
exactly.
Been...
And we get back to the album thing again, Pete. You know, whereas we would buy something, put it on, listen to every track.
Yeah.
And even the ones where we go, do you know what, I'm not quite sure about that. When we listen to it enough, we go, I get that now.
But it's that conversation again about there were some albums, I mean, throughout history, really, where there are every track's a winner.
Mm.
At that time, everyone talks about it and everyone says, I mean, I think of things like Nevermind by Nirvana.
Yeah.
Every track was like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
And people who listen, that was the majority of people.
Mm-hmm.
Things like in 95 when you had Left Field with Leftism, which is a dance thing, but mm-hmm. you might not know.
No.
But again, there were it was all good. Every track was a winner.
Okay.
And so I can think of albums like that throughout, but you would listen to the entire thing.
Yeah.
You wouldn't just play one track,
no.
And because it's vinyl. And I remember, what's his name, Tom Petty, when he did Full Moon Fever,
mm-hmm.
and on the tape, at the end of one side, he tells you have to turn it over now.
Mm.
And it's kind of like, because it was a tape.
Mm.
And for those of you who don't know tapes. So I've still got a tape deck. I've still got a CD player. I've still got my turntable. I need that in my life. Music is, when I came back from Cambodia, the first thing I invested in was a sound system, not a television.
Yeah.
Because no television, no big deal. No music, you know, that keeps you sane. You know, I was in Cambodia when John Peel died, and I now couldn't listen to his half-hour show on the BBC World Service. Mm-hmm. And it was like, what am I going to do now? You know, it was a loss.
Yeah.
Because when you're overseas, you find yourself really struggling with... these kinds of conversations, even.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
Of course, yeah.
You know. So, yeah, I totally agree. If you have any suggestions, by the way, if you're listening, if you have any suggestions of albums which you think are that kind of album, every track's a winner, and I may never have heard of it, please suggest it. Please email me or...
After the Gold Rush, Neil Young.
Yeah.
It's my favourite album.
Okay.
Everything is just...
72.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's Harvest, 72.
Yeah, after the Gold Rush was, I think it was just before Harvest.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually prefer After the Gold Rush to Harvest, although I love Harvest.
Yeah.
There's a slight sound difference that I like.
Okay.
Piano sound nicer on After the Gold Rush.
Well, we can have that debate when we finish. Do you want to play us a track? We're on the way out then.
Yeah, okie dokie.
And we'll go from there. I'm just looking at these. I have these buttons, you see. And I program them with various things, and I forget what they are, and I want to know what Twinkle does. So,
go on, do that. Oh,
that's quite nice. Sparkle's the other one.
Okay.
Oh, that's
ringing the old ears going. Good there,
that,
man.
That's far too long, that one. It goes in the opposite direction to Twinkle, though.
Yeah.
Anyway, there we go. We're all good. I'm going to just go back that way. Oh, no. Because I know now. I'll bring up the guitar, otherwise I won't be able to hear it. Now I know that I need to get a bank of sounds. I have to play it around.
So you've got faders and buttons and switches, see? That's what it's all about, mate. You wouldn't want a mouse. They're so boring.
Oh, God, no, I don't want a mouse, mate.
They're for computers and eating cheese, though. That's what they're for.
Right, what are you going to play for us, do you know?
This is called O for Bode.
How'd you spell that? What?
O for Bode.
O for Bode?
Yes. Sorry, it's my Cockney language. It's a bit hard to understand sometimes.
Well, I don't think so. Anyway, okay, I'm going to fade out and you can crack on, mate.
Okie dokie. Cheers, matey. Bring me a fully functioning brain, a spine that can move freely from pain, but I keep this old heart. If it's all the same, it's the best part of me. Though it's been wounded many a time, shall never exchange for a draconian kind. Always open, given totally free, it's the best part of me. Oh, for bold, won't you tell me so? For the peace that I seek inside my soul, comfort me now in this hour of need. Come tether my roar and benevolent sea. Strong after all it's been through, tell you my woes unbelievably true, but I'll leave it for now. Maybe later you'll see it's the best part of me. Oh, for bold, won't you tell so, for the peace that I seek inside my soul. Oh, for bold, won't you tell me so, for the peace that I seek inside. So comfort me now in this hour of need. Come tether my roar and benevolent sea. Da 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 da
bring me a fully functioning brain, a spine that can move freely from pain, but I keep this old heart. It's all the same, it's the best part of me.
I love it, mate. I love it.
Cheers, fella.
Awesome. Yeah. I'd be coming to the open mic next month.
I am.
Good eye, good eye. Right, ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys, thank you very much for listening. That was Mr. KG. I'm Pete the Hat. Pete the Hat at secretsymphonies.com. If you want to send me an email, drop me a line. You've been listening to
Secret.